Welcome to Mature Allure, where we highlight the experiences and perspectives of women in midlife. I'm your host, Sherry O, and today I'm so excited. We have Chris Ratcliffe on. Chris Ratcliffe on.
Yeah,
Chris Ratcliffe. And we have him on because he specializes in anxious attachments and a few other things. So we're going to talk about relationships today, and we're going to focus on anxious attachments and maybe a little bit on loneliness and how to kind of maneuver that and, you know, how we maneuver that in midlife. Hi, Chris. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about you.
Hi, Sherry. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very grateful. And for those who don't know me, my name is Chris Ratcliffe, as Sherry said. I am a coach specifically for people with an anxious attachment style, which we'll dive into deeply today. I'm excited about that. I also am a self-help author. I've written one book already that's out there in the ether, available on Amazon, called It's Good to See Me Again. And I am almost done my second book right now. It'll be out later this year. So excited about that too.
Oh, congratulations. It's Good to See Me Again. Can we start there? Because I'd like to start there because a lot of times women in midlife, we've lost ourselves, or at least we feel like we've lost ourselves. And some of us want to revert back to those days when we were in our 20s and do all of these things. I mean, sometimes we do things that a few years later, we're like, wait, why did I do that? So talk about that. Like, what was the concept? I'm thinking the concept behind the book and how to move through that.
Yeah, great question. And it's funny that you brought up feeling lost, because the subtitle to the book is How to Find Your Way When You Feel Lost. Mm-hmm. And it's based on my own healing journey. It's a book I really wrote for myself, but I knew could be beneficial for others. Ultimately, it's about embracing change and kind of flowing with the flow of life. It has spiritual undertones, just kind of understanding what surrender is. I quote the Serenity Prayer, you know, the whole concept that we really have to control and change what we can and choose to accept the rest, whatever really isn't ultimately under our control, no matter how tragic or traumatic it might have been. And so I talk about my own traumas and how I found forgiveness and how I really rode the waves of grief of losing my mother and being sexually abused by my sister and being cheated on by exes and all the tumultuous experiences that I had been through. I knew that if I put myself out there in that way and talked about my deepest hurts, that vulnerability would find its audience. And the book has been read by over 1,000 people worldwide, which is awesome. And yeah, it's good to see me again. I released it in 2020. Believe it or not, I finished writing this book about peace and perspective and power in the middle of the OG pandemic, if you will, during lockdown. Yeah. I was writing this book. So yeah, it was a beautiful journey. And it really explains how you can find forgiveness, how you can embrace the beauty of change and what it brings to us all. I know a lot of your listeners are perhaps in a new era or chapter in their lives and really looking for meaning and to let go of what we so often grasp onto, trying to recreate experiences that we had or let go of really painful ones. So the book is all about that. It's about resistance and acceptance, what we can control, and our innate divine ability to choose and our ability to have free will and to embrace life and what it provides to us and a perspective of abundance. There's always another way of looking at that. You know, change is also opportunity. It's possibility. It's not limitation.
Well, let me ask you this, because you brought up forgiveness. How did you go about that? Because like you said, a lot of times this is a time in our lives where we have been hurt or we've hurt others or things like that. And sometimes you hold on to those grudges, and grudge holding is never good. But at a certain age, those grudges weigh on your health. They weigh on your mental health, all of those things. How did you find forgiveness so that you can let go of some of that?
Well, to me, forgiveness is a gift that we give ourselves. It is something deeply rooted in self-love. It is the recognition that there's a tether, there's a chain that is binding us to something that is heavy or hurtful, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And forgiveness offers a way to release some of that. It doesn't condone what happened. It doesn't give permission for it to happen again. As I remind folks all over the world all the time, because forgiveness is also critical to the coaching work that I do with people who struggle with anxious attachment all over the world, forgiveness is not forgetting. Mm-hmm. It is the opposite. It is choosing to remember what has happened and also lifting your vibration in relation to it. So yeah, it's choosing to remember it in a certain way. And for me, forgiveness on my own journey and what I remind people again of all the time is oftentimes we're all doing the best that we can with our wounds and the experiences that we've been through and our level of healing. So if you look at it that way, you can start to see that oftentimes people are just treating you, one, how they treat themselves, so you can start to have empathy for them, and two, at their level of healing or self-awareness. So they probably have no idea how to treat you better, and that's why they did not. They had no idea how to hold their pain or transmute their pain, so they had to project it onto you. They couldn't hold it. So when you start to see that, you can recognize, okay, this isn't my stuff to carry with me, and it's heavy, and I need to put it down. There is a solace that we can unlock when we realize that forgiveness is not for them. It does not change what happened, and nothing can or ever will. But we can choose to see it differently. We can choose to see it as a pathway for redirection and what it has unlocked since. Mm-hmm. We can choose to see it as, no matter how traumatic it has been, an opportunity to connect more deeply with ourselves, with the people that really can hold us and hold space for us and hold our hearts in a safe way. And that's ultimately a beautiful thing. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this might be a strange question to ask, because everyone has the right to feel hurt, feel how they feel. Is there, and you can't really tell someone a specific amount of time to feel that those feelings, but when it comes to forgiveness, do you have kind of, and is there a timeline that you could say someone should give themselves to feel those feelings before they move into the process of forgiveness?
Emotions have been studied pretty extensively in a lot of different fields in the world of psychology and neuroscience and things like that. And what they have found is that emotional experiences themselves, the physiological experience of an emotion, lasts about 90 seconds.
Mm.
We are not meant to hold on to energies, regardless of whether they're heavy or whether they are light, meaning whether they're joyful or whether we're experiencing trauma, powerlessness, etc., fear, anxiety. Mm. You're not meant to hold on to anything. So the sooner you can move into forgiveness, the better, from my perspective, because ultimately it happened. There is no going back. Yeah. The sooner you can embrace the gift that acceptance can provide, the sooner you realize and can provide peace for yourself. Now, ultimately, many people hold on to their pain and their hurt because they are identified with it. This starts to get into a space of victimhood. Really, not victimization, because that is an experience. Victimhood, mm-hmm. which is identification. Many of us don't know who we are without our pain. And that's why we vent. That's why we gossip. And ultimately, it's not helpful. And many of us aren't living in line with our values because of it. And then we experience cognitive dissonance because we're saying one thing and believing or behaving another way. Mm. And so ultimately, the sooner you can move into forgiveness, the better. It depends on what you experienced, though. You may have to move through forgiveness multiple times, and that is also okay. But mm-hmm. the sooner you can move into it, I would recommend maybe after a breakup or a divorce, as soon as a month or two afterwards. You got to allow yourself to feel your feelings, of course. But if you find that months or even years after an event has occurred, you're holding grudges, or you are feeling weighed down or resentful of someone or jaded by an experience, that's on you. You are carrying that pain. You're carrying that energy with you. It is our work to be with that and to release it, however many times it takes. So it depends, is the short answer. But the sooner you can move into it, the sooner you can even put a crack in your resentment or put a wedge in the idea that you need to hold on to a grudge and slowly start to pull it apart and realize that it's not serving you, that resentment is a poison that we drink ourselves. It's not hurting the other person who hurt you. It's hurting you. So the sooner we can move into that and even just say, look, this hurt a lot, but ultimately what matters most for me and is what's going to be most beneficial for me is to do what I can to release this pain, to learn what I can from it, to acknowledge what happened, and to realize that it's not your pain to carry with you for the rest of your life, like some badge of honor.
But you know what? It's so important to have people like you around and in our world and space, because how you grow up, my mother was a grudge holder and kind of lived in that victim neighborhood. I don't want to say kind of. And you said something about why people do it, because they're not sure necessarily who they are and they identify with it. So for her, you saying that, she's no longer here. Love, love, love my mom. I miss her. But that was her thing. You know, like anything that somebody did to her, and it served to me as a lesson. Like I don't want to be bitter. I don't want to be not angry all the time. She was fun, but this was always the topic of conversation. Whatever somebody, it lived on, and it was as the years went on, there were multiple things to talk about, of course, because life happens and people do things to you. So, thinking about it in the terms of when you were talking, we mentioned earlier about the attachment, the anxious attachment, is that something that could be connected to that as well? I mean, I don't know, but she was always stressed, always negative, always like telling the stories to this. I mean, almost to the day she died, she was still talking about the divorce that happened between her and my dad. It was like 30 years old.
Wow. So,
yeah. And you could see it weighing in her health. So how do you, that attachment to those things, how do you move through that?
I think it's important to establish for those watching or listening that every experience we have leaves an impression within us. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we are creatures of our experiences and we are creatures of learning. As human beings, our brain is constantly picking up stimuli and data from the environment around us and then building models about the world and about relationships based on that. So what you go through then shapes how you're going to approach the present and the future. Mm-hmm. And what this sets up is ultimately a visual of seeing life almost as a spectrum from insecure to secure. And this gets into attachment theory. There are four attachment styles. There's one secure on this side of the attachment spectrum. On the other side, on the insecure side, you have three styles: anxious, avoidant, and a combination of the two, anxious, avoidant. And ultimately, for those on the insecure side of the attachment spectrum, they have experienced a lot of things, either big moments that were traumatic, mm-hmm. so death, divorce, diagnosis, disease, things like that, abuse, neglect. And there's also the accumulation of smaller experiences over time, being told to go to your room, to be quiet, to be a good girl or a good boy, to be seen but not heard,
mm-hmm.
to finish your food or you can't go out and play with your friends. That's manipulation. And when those experiences add up, again, either really big and the presence of trauma or the accumulation of smaller invalidating events, or it could be also a lack of love that is also traumatic. You have the abuse that you experienced and the love that you did not get to, or the care or comfort you didn't get, works both ways. It's additive and subtractive trauma. So the more trauma you experience, the more you start to become skeptical of the world. And that's ultimately because your nervous system has learned to be hypervigilant and to be dysregulated. Nervous system dysregulation is a very cliche, overused phrase nowadays. Here's what it really means. It means you're either overreacting to your environment, and many people do this by going into fight or flight, constantly venting, woe is me, etc., or you're underreacting. You're freezing, you're people-pleasing, you don't know what to do, you shut down, you clam up. Works both ways. Nervous system dysregulation is ultimately a reflection of being in a survival state, a trauma response. So when you live in this state for years and years and years, you know nothing else because you have been trained to remain in survival. Many of us become trained through experiences that are not safe, where we can't be truly ourselves, where we don't feel heard or understood or seen for who we are truly, and accepted and loved and cared for being that person. And it's deeply invalidating and hurtful. And with enough experiences and with enough time living in nervous system dysregulation or survival mode, yeah, of course you're going to start to think of the world as a dangerous, fearful place to be wary of and to be jaded by. And yet, if you stop and learn to regulate your nervous system and learn to heal some of the traumas that you've been through, and it's not all or nothing proposition, if you can make enough progress that you can start to feel and be open to different possibilities like peace, calm, comfort, safety, then what you will notice is the world is actually just a reflection, the way we see it, as what's happening inside of us. And that is a reflection of what we have been through. And I look at life as an opportunity to learn, that we're sent here on a spiritual assignment to find ways to evolve at the soul level and to find ways to move through whatever assignments life is throwing at us, whether that is abuse and neglect in all forms, trauma in all forms, or whether that's being in a comforting, loving, stable environment, or both. Many of us experience degrees of both. But at the end of the day, nervous system dysregulation drives the state it seems like your mom was in for many years, and also is why folks develop an insecure attachment style, such as the anxious one. It is an adaptation for trying to get needs met based on the traumas that we have experienced. So people who are anxious tend to be very needy. They're characterized as needy by others. They tend to experience a deep-seated fear of abandonment. They need a lot of reassurance and closeness in their connections. And that's because they've typically had or been deprived of experiences where that were stable and safe and predictable and consistent and loving. And so they learned to cope with their survival state by overreacting and over-engaging. Anxious folks are very leaned in to their relationships. You can feel this from them. They're hypervigilant. They're very loyal. There are good aspects to this. It's not negative per se. Again, it's an adaptation for trauma and for the nervous system dysregulation that results from it.
Well, you know, I don't have any trauma, so to speak, that's happened to me, but maybe because I was raised by someone who had trauma, that anxiousness, I tend to have that a bit. I mean, I even know, like, sometimes I'll go get my nails done, go get a mani and pedi, and I'm sitting there like, okay, thinking about all the things I have to do when I leave or the next day. It's just, energy. Yep. How do you stop? Like, if you're going through something like that, or you've been through trauma, like you said, and you've got that anxious attachment thing going on, how do you, you mentioned stop and kind of move into peace, but how do you do that?
The answer is ultimately, it's complex, and it depends on what your experiences are. But there are methods and techniques that I use with my clients all over the world to help them heal and grow more secure. Ultimately, we need to address our core wounds, our traumas. And for many of us, that does go back to childhood. I know you mentioned, you know, you might not be certain of where this stems from for you, but I think we would all agree children are sponges. They're mm-hmm. always picking up from the energy of the environment around them, and ultimately are paying attention to how a parent behaves, what they do, not what they say. So that is why, even if you don't experience abuse, like even if you're not neglected or abandoned, literally, there are things that you pick up from your environment that you use to create impressions about the world. So we need to revisit those experiences and, again, change our frame of reference to them. That is one of the gifts that I believe forgiveness can offer. One of the reasons, one of the most powerful things that I think people need to hear is that healing is not about blame. Mm-hmm. Healing from childhood trauma is not about blaming parents or a parent or caregivers or a caregiver. It is about recognizing that multiple truths can coexist at once. Your mom, in your instance, or anyone's parents or caregivers can be doing the best that they can with the level of healing and self-awareness that they have and the tools that they had. And also, simultaneously, that can not be enough support and love and care and consistency and warmth for the child. So you can feel neglected even when your parent is giving you everything that they have to give. Again, this is why it's not about blaming. And many parents, when you approach them and say, you know, I've been in therapy, I've been thinking a lot about my childhood, they get defensive naturally. They think, yeah, well, I gave you everything. What did I do wrong? And they personalize it. It's not about that. It's ultimately about how the child feels. So revisiting those feelings is really important because many of us, we did not really feel back then. We learned to check out of the body. Dissociation is a result of dysregulation in the nervous mm-hmm. system. When you don't feel safe enough to feel in your body and to allow the emotions to move through you, because again, they last for about 90 seconds physiologically. Mm-hmm. When you don't let the energy move through you and you grasp onto it and you turn it into a story, you give it meaning. Oh, well, this must mean I'm not good enough, or you know, if I keep getting treated like this, there must be something wrong with me. That's what a child ultimately tells itself. And when you tell yourself that, you need to realize that it is learned. You can unlearn it. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how many years separate you now from you then. You can revisit these experiences and reframe them. I do inner child visualization work with clients where they have conversations with younger versions of themselves. If you didn't experience childhood trauma, first of all, congratulations. You're one of the few. Second of all, you can look at it as previous self work. So whether you go back to when you were a teenager or a young adult and you had experiences that were hurtful or that might still be holding you back now or causing you to be jaded or hold grudges, inner child work can really help with that, or previous self work. Forgiveness is another tool. I have my clients write letters of forgiveness. They don't send them. It's for closure. Many of us never get the closure on the stuff that we went through. So you got to give yourself this gift now. And again, there are techniques for doing this: visualization, letter writing. The other thing is you need to learn to regulate your nervous system and change the relationship that you have with your body. Again, your body has learned to be hypervigilant and to remain in survival mode. If it learned it, it can unlearn it. This is the beauty of all of this. The field of neuroscience has studied neuroplasticity, and neuroplasticity is the idea that the brain is constantly learning, constantly rewiring itself. It's never too late, never too late. It does not matter, again, how many years it's been or how old you are. Start where you are. And that is good enough.
That's why I wanted to have you on the show. Because, you know, moving a lot of times in life, you're just moving along. Things are happening. And like you said, I didn't go through any trauma myself, but I know my mom was abandoned by her mother, things like that. So I think I always learned to live in that tense, even though everything was fine. It was great. She was a wonderful mom. You know what I mean? But just identifying it now, because you are my second guest who has spoken about talking to their inner child, talking to the inner little girl for guidance, truth, love, all of those things. And a lot of times we reach midlife. We've never done that. Like you said, we just kind of move through life and it might seem, maybe I shouldn't do that, but it's almost a form. I don't know if I'm saying this right, of maybe meditation or conversation. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was so excited when I heard you were willing to be on the show, because I think it's so important for women in midlife to really kind of sit for a moment. Think about all of the things that have happened to you, and not why, don't even go, but the things that have happened and how you can move through issues that you might be having. So I want to move into a little bit, since you're here and you're coaching, I want to move into a little bit of loneliness. You know, this is also a time where loneliness can be an issue. You have a lot of women who either divorce or maybe there's a breakup after a lot of years. Children go away, move out of college. There are deaths in the family. Or there are people who just have been alone for a number of years. You have friends and things like that, but you've been alone. How do you navigate loneliness?
Many people don't know this, but the Surgeon General recently, as of I think it was 2016, maybe 2018, around then, declared loneliness an epidemic in this country. And it is far more common than people know or believe or are aware of. So please know that you are not alone in your loneliness. We live in isolating times. Part of that has to do with the effect that the pandemic has had on our society, working from home and isolation and things like that. Another part of it is with technology, we have more ways of connecting when we're not together. But when we are together, we're not really together a lot of times. We're on our phones. We're not really giving someone our undivided attention, our presence. So the experiences that we do have are not as deep. And so you can start to see with the context of what's happening culturally right now, that this is a valid experience and very common. If you want to address loneliness, it's not always about having other people around. Many of us also never learned how to connect deeply with ourselves. That is, ultimately one of the gifts that inner child work can give, one of the gifts that working with a therapist and or a coach like me can give. It is one of the gifts of addressing your traumas, is realizing a lot of us are carrying weight with us that's weighing us down and preventing us from deepening the connections that are available to us now. Many of us also isolate ourselves. We feel a level or degree of social anxiety, which is also normal. Again, I want to normalize this so that people understand, if you just say it, if you declare, hey, I really like hanging out with you, I'd like to do it more often. If you declare that you want more connection with yourself, which much of this is a projection onto others. Again, we see the world as we see ourselves, and we see ourselves based on how we've been treated. So if you've been through considerable trauma, you can start to see why you would disconnect from others without realizing the cause and without addressing it. So that's how all of this dovetails together. And ultimately, loneliness is not a bad thing. Like any emotion, it will pass. You will not feel lonely forever. It's important to acknowledge the feeling and validate it, while also realizing that our feelings are directionally helpful, but they're not facts. Meaning, your feelings are often calling you back into your body. That feeling of loneliness can be telling you, I feel disconnected from self. I feel disconnected from spirit or God or the universe or energy. I feel disconnected from colleagues. I feel disconnected in a variety of different ways. And honestly, another word for trauma could be disconnection. Disconnection is traumatizing to human beings because we are social creatures. And yet, many of us don't know where to start with connecting with ourselves or what that even means. Meditation is a way to connect with yourself. Visualization or having that ongoing conversation with your inner child is a way of connecting with yourself. Writing yourself a love letter is a way of connecting with yourself. And many of us hold back in our relationships and we're not vulnerable. We don't tell people how we really feel. This is a big part of the work that I do with my clients who are anxious attachers because they hold back. They stuff it down. They don't want to be too much or needy. No, I don't want to be clingy. I can't say that. Yes, you can, and you should. We're not getting any younger. You don't need to dance around the truth, especially if it is your truth and how you are feeling. The more you open up to others, the more they will open up into you. It works both ways. You got to give to get.
I love feelings are directional, not facts, because we do live in our feelings. You know, to say, oh, I'm all in my feelings right now. Well, we're kind of always all in our feelings. Like you said, I know I'm one of those people that kind of holds back, like, and will say, I make the assumption that there are several things you have said today that have hit home with me. One of them is people treat you, sometimes what people do to you, they don't even really understand or know that they're doing. This is what they know, right? So yes. For me, why that connects so much is sometimes if somebody does something, I'm like, oh, they know what they did. You know what I mean? They know, they understand, they did it for, and I won't say anything. I'll just pull back where maybe they don't know any better. Maybe they didn't realize or don't realize what they've done. And it's not, I don't want to say it's not major. These aren't like traumatizing things that are happening. These are more things that make people, it make somebody like me in their feelings. So it's really, really, that's really poignant to say feelings are directional, not fact. Because
so many of us do, and they're not facts. Your rational brain and your emotional brain are separate. This is why you can't think your way out of your feelings, although many of us try. And that is ultimately a reflection of nervous system dysregulation too. Yeah. But at the end of the day, your feelings can tell you one of two things, and it's usually both together simultaneously. I'm disconnected from self, and or I'm disconnected from you or from somebody else. So it's driving you to open up and tell them, hey, you probably didn't intend that, but this is how it came across to me. And I actually found that hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And stop there. Don't overexplain. Let there be silence and let the other person speak. Stop there. A lot of us will keep going and say, well, I know you didn't mean it. And you know, it's okay. No, don't go into people pleasing or fawning mode. Say what it is, speak the truth, and stop there.
And I guess that would give them a chance. You're giving them a chance to respond, and then you can kind of feel or not feel. I don't want to use that word. You can get to hear what their thought process is at that time. Wow.
You're dignifying them. You're humanizing them. You're saying, I care enough to open up into this connection to tell you how this came across to me. Did you intend it to come across like that? Help me understand your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we build safety through listening.
So let's talk a little bit before we go. Before we go, I want to bring back the talking or having a conversation with your inner child. And why, again, that is important, because I see it. I see the reason. I see it. I've tried it. Like I said, after my other guest, I was like, what? And it's almost calming. But I want to hear why you feel it's so important that we do this.
Let me ask you a question, Cherry. Do you think that the way somebody else speaks to you matters?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You want them to speak to you in a respectful, dignifying, integral, honest, vulnerable manner, correct?
Yes.
And yet many of us do the exact opposite to ourselves. And we don't realize that that is the learned voice. It is the tape, the recording, the impression in your nervous system from the most critical person or people in your life. We turn into our own biggest critics because we have been criticized. Again, told to calm down. Don't be so sensitive. Go to your room if you're going to cry. You know, be seen but not heard. The way that you speak to yourself matters tremendously. It holds great power. And when we speak to ourselves in a disrespectful, critical, judgmental manner, it re-harms, it re-traumatizes, it re-wounds us now and also the child that originally experiences that. If you can learn to say, to stop and just start to say to yourself, it's okay that I'm feeling this. In fact, it makes sense because blank. Because I feel hurt. A lot of this is also sobering up to reality. There's a book called Loving What Is by Byron Katie that I love. That's all about becoming a lover of reality. Mm. So many of us are living in a state of survival and therefore delusion. We're not in reality. The reality is, if you keep talking to yourself in a negative way, you're going to view the world negatively. And if you start saying to yourself, you're beautiful, I have the opportunity to hang out with this friend today, instead of, oh, I have plans with this person, I gotta go do another thing today. If you start to change the nature of the dialogue that you have inside, you start to become a lover of reality. And you start to be presented with fewer and fewer problems. You start to become more grateful. You start to become appreciative of what you bring to the table. You start to soothe the versions of you that you carry with you inside, that young one and the teenage versions and the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. They are all there with you. Many of my clients who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s say, I don't feel a day older than 25.
Yeah.
That version of you is still there. It's still there. Talk to her. Give her closure. Let her know the hurts she experienced are valid. And it's okay to let them go. She doesn't need to hold on to them anymore. You've got her back now. She doesn't need to stay in survival mode.
Wow, Chris, this has been so, so, so great having you here on Mature Allure. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm going to have you back, though, because I want to talk a little bit about being delusional, but that's a whole nother thing, because we can have a whole show on that. But thank you so much. If somebody was interested in coaching or being coached by you, how do they get in touch with you?
Thank you so much for the kind words, Sherry. It means a lot. I have discovered my life's purpose. And I am living that every day. And I'm so deeply grateful to be here having this conversation. And I hope that it's resonated with folks who are watching and or listening. If you are interested in exploring what we've discussed today a bit further and working on your own inner dialogues and healing your relationship with your own inner child, or if you do identify as someone who's needy and overly coping, maybe overly loyal, overly focused on what's happening in your relationships, you might have an anxious attachment style. I have a few different resources on my website at crackliff.com, C-Rackliff, CRACKLIFFE.com/secure. Secure is spelled SECURE for those who might not be spelling bee champs. And on that page, there are a couple of resources. The first, you can sign up for my free newsletter and you'll get my text messaging guide for people with an anxious attachment style. Texting is their biggest trigger or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. Communication or lack thereof is their biggest trigger. So those are some really great tips that can be helpful right away. Also on that page, I have a healing starter kit for people who struggle with anxious attachment. Within that kit, there's an inner child visualization or meditation. It's almost 15 minutes long that you get, as well as over 85 pages of journaling prompts and over 3.5 hours of content to help you understand yourself and to heal. And for those who are interested in even more accountability on that page as well, you can set up an appointment to talk to me for a free consultation.
Awesome. I'll also put all of these things in the description as well. So that way,
thank you.
Everyone who needs to get in touch with you, which is probably everyone, has access to your information. Again, thank you, Chris, for coming. It has been a great, great, great conversation. It's helped me a lot. It's given me a lot to think about. And I look forward to having you back.
Thank you so, so much. Thank you, Sherry.
You're listening to the Mature Allura podcast. I'm your host, Sherry O. If you have a topic in mind that you'd like us to cover on Mature Allura, drop us a note in the comments or share it with us on one of our social media channels. Until the next time, remember, self-love is the key to unlocking the radiant allure that shines from within.